that maybe I knew about before, or maybe, you know, somebody invites me to an event, or I hear about a protest going on, or there's some new campaign that's being started, or an old campaign that's being, you know, that's something that, whatever it is that interests me, that I just love that I have the flexibility to go after that and follow that. So I look forward to the mystery of what's going to be exciting and interesting for me next year.
Much yet to come. Do you have any final thoughts before we wrap up?
Just that I love KBOO, and I'm just so appreciative to have the opportunity to be a volunteer for the news. And I just so appreciate you, Althea, and all of your hard work to make it happen every day.
Aw, thank you. And thank you for all your great reporting this year. Intrepid reporting by Isabel.
Yeah, thank you.
You are listening to a special edition of the KBOO Evening News, the best of 2023. We're taking a look back with our reporters on some of their favorite stories from the year. We've just been speaking with KBOO reporter Isabel Charlet. Now let's listen to some more of her reporting from 2023.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you for holding this energy in this moment as we are demanding that our elected officials pay attention, don't look away, and call for a ceasefire now. Ceasefire now!
Ceasefire now!
This is what needs to continue to happen. We cannot let our government go on business as usual as the genocide is taking place.
That's right! We are here as Jews because our collective experiences of oppression have been cynically weaponized to justify the oppression of others. We are here as U.S. residents because our tax dollars are used without our consent to fund the continued genocide of Palestinians and theft of Palestinian land.
Activists focused on pressuring Blumenauer because he has expressed concern for the safety of Gazans. In a recent statement, he said that cutting off water, electricity, medicine, fuel, and humanitarian aid has already created horrific conditions. Blumenauer has worked for years to solve the water and sanitation crisis in Gaza and says he knows full well the consequences they face. Yet, he has stopped short of calling for a ceasefire.
He knows that the U.S. is not simply complicit. The U.S. is committing this genocide. The U.S. funds it. The U.S. arms it. And President Biden could get on the phone right now to Netanyahu and say, stop it, and it would stop. Blumenauer, you know what the right thing to do is, so do it. Ceasefire now.
There are Palestinians and Gazans risking their lives to show us what's happening on the ground. We owe them to not look away. We owe them to pay attention, and we owe them to take action.
For KBOO News, I'm Isabel Charlet.
We're right here. We're
What's it been like to be part of this process, and what does it mean for you to have climate change as integrated into your curriculum as a high schooler?
Yeah. So the first place I was introduced to climate change was in the context of my seventh grade science classroom. And the narrative that was taught to me was that, yes, climate change exists, but there's not much you could do about it. And if you were to do it, it was all about individual actions like turning off the lights in your house or using less water. And as I grew up and I saw more climate catastrophes and events happen around me, I felt that no amount of my own action could really have caused the impacts that I see around me or could solve the impacts around me. So that's where me and Chloe stepped in as the role of the co-president of our school's Environmental Justice Club, because we were able to find a community of students who were passionate about climate change but couldn't find that education in their schools. So we felt like it was our responsibility to give that education. And now that we're able to have schools take accountability for their students' climate education, I'm really excited for it.
Yeah, me as well. Being part of the student advisory committee for this bill was super empowering because I felt like I could have an input as a student who is impacted by the climate crisis, like just everyone else. But because, same as Erica, I didn't really have any formal climate change related education besides a single unit in middle school, and that education was not framed in a way that was hopeful or optimistic that communities can come together and create systemic change.
So this bill would require all, my understanding is it would require all K through 12 public schools to integrate climate change education. And what seems special about it is that it's across all subjects.
Right.
So could you just elaborate a little more on what your goal is with this bill?
As Chloe and Eric have described, you know, there needs to be a more comprehensive, you know, approach to learning about it, you know, not just like the science of it, you know, here's how it works, here's the impacts, and sort of a good luck with that approach. If we can, you know, incorporate these solutions and these kind of messages of hope, and here's what you can do about it, even if it's just through artistic expression, like, you know, having a poetry slam that has a, you know, a theme of climate change where kids can really connect in ways, I think that's super important. And in a science class, we just don't have time for that.
So it's the bill does not require teachers to do anything that they're not used to doing already. There's just so many ways to, the economics of climate change are huge. If you name a subject, I can tell you there's just a million ways to incorporate the climate change lessons. It's for every subject. Geography, where are climate refugees coming from and what are they fleeing? History classes, when did climate change start and what is the historic timeline that parallels the industrial revolution with the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere?
What Darren just described is spot on. And I think also it's important to kind of mention that it's not like we're asking to teach climate change all the time, right? Like it's, you know, it's not a, oh gosh, we're going to do this instead of. It's rather like, you know, here's your usual math or social studies or language arts curriculum. You know, here's a lesson or a couple lessons that could be peppered in and, you know, to be integrated and incorporated. So I think that is a little of the pushback we get is, you know, it's not, we're not asking that to be the topic for all things every day, right? You know, it's just how can it be incorporated and relevant to what you might already be doing?
And Chloe and Erica, is there anything that either of you would like to add as we wrap up here?
If any of the listeners would like support in writing to their representatives or aren't sure how to do that, they can visit ourfutureoregon.org. And then also in relation to the bill, one aspect of it that I find is super crucial is how it incorporates language like teaching students about indigenous knowledge and ways of knowing, because I think that is so often overlooked when it comes to conversations surrounding the climate crisis. And that is not language that you often see in climate-related bills. And in addition to that, teaching about the disproportionate impacts of climate change on marginalized communities, especially low-income people, people of color, in general, just talking about the human impact.
Yeah, I think what I would say is that we ask legislators to adequately prepare students for threats to our livelihoods and futures and to leave a legacy where they can bring our community together to empower youth and make us into the young change makers we are.
This is a special edition of the KBOO Evening News, the best of 2023. We've just taken a look back at some of Isabel Charlet's reporting this past year. If you appreciate volunteer-produced news, music, culture, and more, consider supporting KBOO on this, the last week of our end-of-year campaign. Go online to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Back to the best of. 2023 was the year that Reed Johnson joined the news team. I spoke with him to hear some of his reflections on his reporting and the year behind. I'm here with Reed Johnson, news volunteer, news host, news anchor.
multifaceted, I suppose.
Do you
Thank
say
you.
Hi?
Sure. Hi. Hey. Hello, listeners.
They probably recognize your voice. Well, Reed, I've asked you here in order to, you know, give a little peek behind the curtain, maybe of what it's like to be a KBOO News volunteer. How did you get involved with us?
I got involved with KBOO. Well, I was first a listener and then became a volunteer. So I knew about the radio station, and I participated in radio in college. So I already was interested in doing some radio stuff, and reached out to KBOO to see if there's any volunteering opportunities. And I think I guess I originally got on as a wall painter.
Yeah, while you were doing the front.
So my handiwork can be seen if you walk into the KBOO studio too.
And then you've been in the news department for quite a while. You do a lot of anchoring with us. You do a lot of writing as well. What are some of the things that you like about doing the news in particular?
It saves me time. I don't have to read the newspaper in the morning because I just get to read the nicely edited news readers. No, in all seriousness, it's fun to it's exciting to rewrite something and know that it's going to be read on air. It's fun working with other volunteers, kind of being part of a project that you get to see the rewards of which every day. I think that's a really nice aspect of it.
Yeah, it's a quick turnaround. There's a lot of, what's the opposite of delayed gratification? Immediate gratification.
Instant
gratification. There we go. Thank you.
Not instant, I suppose. There's a 30-minute delay.
40-second delay.
Sorry, 40-second delay.
Let me correct the record on that. What are some of the stories that we've covered at KBOO, like that are maybe your pet issues or things in particular that you've been interested in that we've talked about?
What sorts of issues have I covered? I've covered some labor issues with new seasons, a new season store unionizing, and covered the war in Gaza as well. I've done some reporting on that. One pet project was probably doing the in-depth piece on the Oregon Natural Desert Association. That was because that was a piece that I kind of put together and thought of myself and kind of did all the work on bringing it onto the air. I was already volunteering for this organization, the Oregon Natural Desert Association, this nonprofit based out of Bend. They do a lot of, this one was a riparian restoration project. So they do a lot of ecological restoration projects in Eastern Oregon, in the high desert. And I was already planning to go on one of these work retreat volunteer trips and thought I might as well take some recording equipment along, record some on-site sounds of repairing this stream. This was way out in southeastern Oregon, east of Plush, for those that are familiar with small southeastern Oregon towns. And we were on Beatty's Butte, and yeah, I took some audio recording equipment, recorded some interviews, recorded the sounds of Beatty's Butte, and then turned it into a little 15-minute piece.
Let's listen in to some of Reed's reporting from this year.
I recently drove 7 hours to Beatty's Butte in the southeastern Oregon high desert to join 10 other volunteers of the Oregon Natural Desert Association, or ONDA, in mesic restoration work. Oregon's high desert complicates the predominant narrative of Oregon as a state of coniferous forests and steady rainfall. Indeed, the high desert, comprising both parts of the Great Basin and Owyhee River watershed, represent about a quarter of the state's landmass. The high desert is not arid by desert standards, yet mesic habitats, where water meets land, make up only 2% of the landscape. These riparian areas, wet meadows, and watersheds are not only vital water reserves, they offer a diverse menu of wildflower and insect foods for the wildlife of the region. It's why, in an area dominated by cattle ranching, the vast majority of mesic habitats in Oregon's high desert are on private land. The monopolization of mesic habitats by cattle has uprooted native wildlife, like the sage grouse, who depend on their availability for their breeding grounds, called leks. On Beatty's Butte, ONDA hopes to counteract this trend and offer to federal land stewards like the BLM an example of a functional natural community that's been in decline for over 100 years. I spoke with Jefferson Jacobs, Onda's riparian restoration coordinator and the trip leader, about the site and the scope of the restoration project.
We're in the beautiful middle of nowhere. We're on the slopes of Beatty's Butte, which is a sky island of a mountain between Hart Mountain, Antelope Refuge, and Steens Mountain Wilderness. And we're here because it's core sage-grouse habitat, and we are trying to basically build a grocery store for sage-grouse. We're trying to use the water that comes off the mountain for watering flowering plants and basically growing insects that the sage-grouse need to eat.
In this first stage of restoration work, we built structures in a seasonal stream out of nearby organic materials to slow the water down and expand the stream bed. Here's Justin, a fellow volunteer, describing the structures as he and I work.
We're putting down a layer of nearby like brush and foliage so that we can get the water to run through a filter effectively. This will slow the water down and raise the water level above the filter and then clean the water below it. Starting our first layer of foliage right now. Just kind of squelching it into the mud.
For Scott, another volunteer, there were valuable philosophical implications to be taken from the work.
We could all take like a little bit of lesson about like slowing down and absorbing things and spreading it around, and instead of always trying to channelize everything and work for maximum speed. So I kind of appreciate this like attempt to slow it down and push water uphill a little bit, so, and spread it wide, so hopefully this will really distribute the groundwater, and that's kind of my takeaway, is like be like the sponge here.
We work to restore areas in Oregon's high desert, but there's only so much that we can do to so many places that we can be. Onda volunteers are spectacular and they work really, really hard, but regardless, there's only so much they can do. So our goal in this location is pretty much our strategy in any project, in that we'll do a project and show the potential of an area. People have forgotten the ecological potential of a lot of plant communities or ecosystems in eastern Oregon, but we'll demonstrate that to land managers and landowners out here, and with the idea that then they can implement similar projects on their properties, and that way we're all working together on more locations. So this is a demonstration project to show the Lakeview BLM district what could happen out here, and actually have a meeting with them in a couple of weeks to talk about this very project. So now I have some nice photos to show them. Eastern Oregon is a very fragile place. It's a landscape distinguished by bunch grasses that grow kind of in these little islands, isolated from each other, surrounded by a sea of cryptobiotic crust, which is this amazing symbiotic relationship between lichens and moss and all this. It looks like kind of odd bare dirt, but is actually a really productive area, and all of that is very, very fragile, and just by the action of walking around on it, cattle or humans or trucks or anything like that will break up that cryptobiotic crust. It's gone and your land starts blowing away, starts drying out. And when you get large creatures eating things that are yummy and not eating things that aren't so yummy, like sagebrush and rabbitbrush, or in many cases juniper, then you get more and more of the unyummy things on the landscape and fewer of the yummy things on the landscape. So the balance changes of what you have in your plant community. The other thing that happens is that as that balance natural balance changes in your plant community, that impacts the wildlife. And the wildlife are wanting to eat a lot of the same things that cows eat. And so in some places, you can have really carefully managed grazing, and it works with wildlife. In other places, the math doesn't work out so well, and it becomes a lot more of a question of displacement of wildlife. So we're trying to encourage the math to be in favor of the wildlife in at least a few places before they blink out, before sage grouse gets actually listed or that sort of thing, which will be if we can prevent sage grouse from blinking out, that would be better for everyone, wildlife, people too. So
Onda volunteers expressed to me a similar sense of urgency on how they approach the volunteer work. Many, like Robin and Andrew, are longtime volunteers for the organization.
This is probably about my maybe 15th. Over the last 8 years, I try to do 2 or 3 a year. So yeah, it's not my first rodeo.
What keeps bringing you back to Onda?
I love the results that you see, the work that's done and how much it affects the landscape and brings back natural, like the riparian areas. It's very satisfying to see the results of our work.
What does this work mean to you personally?
Oh, sore body. I really enjoy giving back to the community. So it's one of the ways that I like to give back to the community.
Onda itself, I believe in the mission and the goals that they're trying to accomplish here in Oregon's desert. It's such a long-term vision and project that it really takes special people to get going with it, realizing how much time is going to be involved in staying with it. Another thing is you come out on these trips and you meet a lot of interesting, fairly like-minded people who are just out trying to help and do the right thing. And quite frankly, it gets me out into places in the state of Oregon, beautiful places that I would never have access to without it.
I spoke on Tuesday with Rael Atkerson, a main organizer for the New Seasons Concordia branch of the newly formed New Seasons Labor Union, about his and other organizers' efforts to negotiate a contract for unionized New Seasons employees. The New Seasons Labor Union, or NSLU, is an independent, employee-led union which emerged out of the unionization efforts at 7 Portland New Seasons stores, those being Seven Corners, Slabtown, Woodstock, Grant Park, Arbor Lodge, Cedar Hills, and Concordia. The contract that NSLU is bargaining for will cover all unionized stores. I began our conversation by asking Rael where negotiations stand currently.
What can be said about the phase that we're in right now is it's largely preliminary. We have successfully had 2 of our bargaining meetings at the full NSLU level, where we have standards started out with the ground rules and negotiation rules. One of those things would be the terms in which we can negotiate and how many observers and representatives will be there. Other things include, will the conversations be recorded and available for education and resource purposes? After our first 2 meetings, the company New Seasons has decided that they will not allow any recording. So that would be something, as an example, that has been sussed out already. There are things that we have on the table that we're asking for, and as a clause for our next bargaining meetings, we'll continue to compile and increase that list as time goes, and we continue to grow and unfold and make our demands and grievances more widely known and understood.
So, Rael, what has been the response of the New Seasons management to you and your fellow organizers at the NSLU?
We've seen different hurdles and different feedback from different managers at different locations. Our location, we've had a very healthy, constructive relationship with the management at our store level. But I can say that we have documented different instances where it has not been that way at different locations. One of the things that we can say that the company has motioned all department level managers and up at every New Seasons is they're now going to make sure that all management is trained on registers. just in case the collective organizing leads to any striking or picketing on the clock, company is trying to prepare their department managers to be able to step in and fulfill our, they think they can fulfill our spots if we take any organized collective action, which is nothing that we're threatening and nothing that we are looking to do, but we do find that as an example of the attitude and posturing of our company and what the management is being asked to do. And I'll say lastly that when it comes to how management may be responding differently, is a lot of protocol and talking points in this time are coming down through emails and obsessive daily meetings for maybe 20 or 30 minutes with executive management and Zoom calls, training our management on what to say and not to say. But ultimately, they're in a rock and a hard place too, because the NSLU knows and understands its fight is not against our managers by any means in our stores. It is executive class that continues to wish to make policy and decide how our labor should be exploited without any consent or proper surveying of the staff and hearing the cries that they're demands that they're asking for.
You described to me your history with New Seasons. You've worked there for several years. You've left. You've come back. And one of the main things that drew you back to New Seasons was the sense of community. Perhaps you can provide myself and our listeners with an idea from the NSLU of how a unionized, collectivized New Seasons workforce can strengthen the New Seasons image, can work in harmony, and promote this idea of community in the business.
New Seasons is, for example, proudly touted being the first grocer to be B Corp certified. And to unpack that for the listeners, if they don't know, is that it's a eco-sustainability and labor force rating, the best that we have currently in this country, that will rate the environmental cost of the company, their environmental contribution, and their promises to their labor force. It has long fallen from that being in its last assessment for 2022. Actually, correction, its assessment for 2021. 2022 has yet to be released. New Seasons only passed B Corp certification by 1 point, showing a decline in over 30 points over the last couple assessments. Not just this B Corp trend, but the trend that is more evident has been where the money is, and the money being the Endeavor Capital investment group that used to own New Seasons had a whole intention and direction to position the company that is New Seasons today to be what it is and continue unfolding to what it is. It is streamlined to be your average mainstream corporation now that could compete with stores like Whole Foods in their neighborhoods, and they're looking to continue to expand. Since Endeavor Capital sold the company to Good Food Holdings just a few years ago, which is owned by a Korean multinational conglomerate group, better known as E-Mart, ever since then, there has been no interest in the local community. It's dissolving rapidly, and our fight, NSLU, is to try and put a stop to that. Our biggest collective pull together is to hold New Seasons accountable to the company that it was founded on and the values it still proclaims, the image it still wears, from everything from being locally sourced foods to being locally sourced diverse people and staff.
That was Rael Adgerson, a main organizer for New Seasons Concordia and co-organizer with the local independent New Seasons Labor Union. From KBOO News, this is Reed Johnson.
Those were some of the highlights of Reed Johnson's stories in 2023. Well, you've been listening to a special edition of the KBOO Evening News, the best of 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we really can't do it without your help. Consider donating to KBOO during the last week of our end-of-year campaign. kboo.fm/give is the website to donate, but you can also text the word KBOO to 44321. A big thank you to all of the volunteer reporters who contributed to the newscast this past year. I'm so grateful for your work and your perspective and your time and your service to the community. Thank you to all of the KBOO members and donors who have supported us this year, and thank you for listening. For KBOO, I'm Althea Billings. We'll be right back.
KBOO's end of year campaign is happening right now. We invite you to donate and become a member today. We have the full spectrum of ways to join. Go to kboo.fm/give or by texting KBOO to the number 44321. You can also mail a check to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. Cut through the clouds and make it rain to help us meet our $75,000 goal by December 31st.
Tune in every weekday morning from